Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm William.
This is the podcast where we talk about all things tabletop and role-playing games.
And today we are covering Azers. Hey, Brian.
William.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. So glad you're better.
Me too. I'm hoping to be even better the next recording.
That's how we do it.
Indeed. Year of the Elemental, Brian.
We're still here.
Can't stop, won't stop.
I refuse.
You know, it's also the year of, dear God, can we just finish the Monster Manual already?
Before the new one drops
in November or whatever. So today's episode tries to address both of these situations. Mm-hmm. It's a topic that is both an elemental and is a monster that we have not covered yet for the 2014 Monster Manual. And it's one I don't think that you have too much familiarity with at
I don't
all.
Think so either. It's yeah. Not really ringing a bell.
No. Today we're covering the Azer. Is there anything that you can tell me about the Azer, Brian?
I mean, here on the spot, no yeah. Prep, no.
Okay. Just wanted to check.
Okay.
All right. So Azers are elemental humanoids native to the elemental plane of fire, mm-hmm. And the elemental chaos, especially in fourth edition. They bear a resemblance to dwarves, but with brass colored, and in fact, they are made of brass, skin and hair. Their hair and beards are composed of pure elemental fire.
Ooh.
So they're like brass dwarf dudes with beards and hair of fire. The brass of their skin appears to have been forged from fire and metal. Most Azers are shirtless, displaying their strong, muscular brass bodies. And why wouldn't you? And many wear kilts and apron-like garments made of beaten brass, bronze, or copper.
For sure.
Azer bodies are so hot that their weapons conduct heat, visibly glowing orange, red, and any creature within reach of an Azer risks injury by intense heat.
It reminds me of Zoolander. He's so hot, that Hansel. So hot right now. These Azers. They're so buff.
They're very sexy.
They're very hot. Yeah.
We should pull up an image of one. Hold on. We gotta pull up an image of one.
Okay.
Azer D&D 5e. They're less hot. They're less sexy than they sound when you describe them. But they're also not sexy. I mean, this one's not sexy. But
it's arguably sexy.
It's arguably sexy. I mean, he's got the bod. That's for sure.
Right, yeah. And everyone's got different faces, so maybe there are Azers that are sexier than others.
Yeah, I wish I could forge my body
handsome
in the fires
or beautiful.
Of the plane of fire.
Look at these Azers. I could see they've all got massive shoulders and
those
biceps.
Those are definitely
they're
fourth
ripped.
Edition Azers is all I got to say.
Fourth edition Azers are hotter than five edition Azers for sure.
All right, let's get back to it.
So they're BDSM hot. They've got
yes,
whips and chains.
Very much
and
so.
Probably lots of candle wax.
Natives of the elemental plane of fire, Azers are master crafters, expert miners, and sworn foes of the Ifrit. In appearance and manner, an Azer resembles a male dwarf, but this is a facade. Beneath its metallic-looking skin, an Azer is a being of fire, which outwardly manifests in its fiery hair and beard.
Yeah, oh, the Ifrit are the fire genies?
Yes.
And it's because
assholes.
It's because they subjugate.
Yeah, they do subjugate. And yeah, we'll get into it. And yeah, they subjugated the Azers.
Okay, so there you have it. The Ifrit were like, you guys are so hot.
Can we just keep you?
Get in my house and never leave and make me weapons.
I don't know why I thought of LSP for a minute. You can't have my body. So anyways, so
Azers, that's a good LSP.
Thank you. Azers don't reproduce. They're each crafted from bronze by another Azer and imbued with a portion of the crafter's inner flame, which is a very personal way of creating a child, I suppose.
Here
is a portion of my inner soul, and I've placed it inside you to give you life.
That's some Christian Bible stuff.
I guess so, yeah. Each Azer is sculpted with unique features. This crafting process limits the growth of the Azer population. It is the primary reason that these creatures remain rare, which makes a lot of sense.
Sounds hard.
It sounds very difficult, and, you know, you can only make one at a time. I mean, maybe you could create, like, like an assembly line and just create a bunch of Azers, but where are you going to get all the fire soul from, right?
I guess.
I mean, you just have a bunch of sacrifices ready to go. Like, how many Azers can one Azer provide soul for? You know what I mean? Like, if we took all your fire, could we distribute it amongst, 10 other Azers? Create an Azer army?
Are you saying blow up the existing one to make...
To create a whole new generation of Azers? I'm speaking as an evil arch wizard here of, like, how do I create an army of Azers?
We could do it like when cells split, you know, like... Mm-hmm. It probably takes time before a cell can split again.
Yeah.
Right?
That makes the most sense.
It's mitochondria has to powerhouse the cell.
Indeed. Indeed it does.
Okay, I want to be clear here because it says your notes say that Azers don't reproduce. They do this.
Well, okay, they don't reproduce sexually. They don't biologically reproduce.
But that doesn't mean that they don't fuck.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. They can make whatever equipment they want on their body.
Hey.
And they can do with it what they will.
There you go.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Azers dwell in a kingdom on the border between the elemental plane of earth and the elemental plane of fire. A range of mountains and volcanoes whose spires rise as a series of fortresses. Beneath mountain peaks, under volcanic calderas, and amid rivers of magma, Azers extract gleaming metals and glittering gems from the earth. Squads of Azer patrol the passes and tunnels of their realm, fending off the salamander raiders whose Ifrit masters order strikes against the Azer kingdom.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Long ago, the Ifrit and the Azers were allies. Azers helped create the City of Brass, forging that home of the Ifrit into one of the most wondrous places in creation. When the Azers had finished their work, the Ifrit betrayed them, making a failed attempt to enslave the Azers so as to protect the secrets of the city. Despite occasional raids and skirmishes, however, the two sides have so far refrained from all-out conflict. The Azers believe that only the threat of them revealing the hidden ways into the City of Brass keeps the Ifrit in check. Which makes a lot of sense, because the Ifrit do not seem like the kind to forgive, forget, or let things go in general. So
right.
There must be something keeping them back, and it's not the massive Azer population. We just said that they don't have one.
I wonder if we'll find out in, like, sometimes we find stuff out, this niche info, uh-huh, in, like, other lore.
That's
like,
true.
Maybe when we do the City of Brass episode, which I'm more excited about with every episode we do.
It comes up a lot, doesn't it?
It does come up a lot.
Yeah, so, I'm looking forward to that. I think I'll put that one in the heart of summer because it's such a hot location.
So hot. Like these Ifrits.
You got like my body. Azers. Azers are masterful artisans and create beautiful works from the gems and precious metals found in the volcanic habitat. They rate the value of such treasures above all other things, sometimes dispatching parties across the plains to seek out rare metals and gemstones.
Okay.
So they're very dwarf-like in this aspect of their lives as well. They're very much about creation and metalwork and gemwork and all that other stuff.
Yeah, and they're thick because they work out a lot doing all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're treasure hunters, randomly.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty cool.
So real quick, Azers are monsters that I feel like more so than a lot of other monsters could very well deserve a playable race stat block. I think this would be a really cool monster race to play. They're obviously people.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think there's anything particularly powerful. When we look at the stat block, maybe we'll see something, but I don't think there's anything particular about them that makes them ineligible for a playable race. You know what I mean? If Fire Genasi can be playable, I don't see why an Azer can't.
Yeah, this 5e is sort of leaning in that direction anyway. True. Where like, I don't know, like goblins are playable, right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely. And they should be.
And they get subjugated.
Yeah,
and,
sure,
like,
absolutely.
There are more monstrous versions of goblins that do the subjugating. Like, this is kind of like...
Yeah, Very, yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot, there's so much subjugation lore in D&D.
Well, I mean, okay. So let's talk about that just for a split second. We don't have to get super deep into it. The reason I think that is the case is because a lot of fantasy is a reflection of human history. And
yeah.
Whether we like to admit it or not, slavery and subjugation has been the name of the game for most of human history.
Yeah, it's a part of it.
And since a lot of fantasy is based off the past, I think we just see a lot of reflection there. And it doesn't mean it has to be there, and it doesn't have to be there in your game. And
it's definitely here.
It's definitely here.
Yeah.
But maybe that's why it doesn't bug me, because I view it from a historical point.
It's like art imitates life.
Art imitates life, yeah.
That's my thing, is like, it didn't have to be here, but it is. And I get that that's a cool area of conflict to explore,
especially
in like a hero's journey, mm-hmm. where like you can't have a triumph against subjugation arc without subjugation
existing, right?
But there's just a lot.
There is a lot.
Yeah.
There is a lot. And
it's like every villain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That makes them
bad. Also, if we look at most of the quote unquote villains of history, almost all of them. But I hear what you're saying, and I think what you're saying is super valid as well. But I think it's okay for it to exist. I see what you mean by there is a lot of it, but I also think we're moving away and in a bunch of other different directions, and that's great too.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. It's interesting. It's just interesting to mm-hmm. to see it in so many corners of across so many years.
Yeah. I also think it's an easy thing to do when you're trying to make like an evil, like Ifrits are base, like they're not actually devils or demons, but they are the next closest thing, basically.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we have these evil, tyrannical things. What do they do? Well, they subjugate.
Right.
And they
they like free labor for capital gain.
Right. Exactly. Oh,
I'd really
capitalism.
I'm clawing at the walls of this rabbit hole to not slide down it.
All right, so let us continue on then.
Yeah.
When Aesirs are called by magic to the material plane, it is typically to help forge an elaborate magic item or work of art. For it is said that their skill in such craft knows no equal.
Ooh.
Which I'm sure a lot of dwarves don't like that.
Yeah, I was going to say they're going to take contempt with that.
But it's probably true.
Whoa.
They are themselves creation.
The elves randomly will get mad at that too.
I guess they would. I mean, the thing
dwarves
is...
Dwarves and elves fight about that.
They do fight about that. The thing is, both dwarves, elves, or all three of dwarves, elves, and Aesir are probably just really, really good at what they do in particular.
Yeah.
And like whether something is subjectively better than others is a matter of opinion.
They all have their own niche.
Exactly. Like I'm not going to go to an Aesir for something I want to resemble elven work.
Right.
I'm certainly not going to them to work with wood.
Here's what these Aesirs need, and I don't see it in the rest of the notes here, but
yeah.
They need a god. They need a pantheon so that they can also say that they are God's people.
I think Aesirs, and I don't know, yeah, maybe I didn't put it in the notes, but I think a lot of Aesirs worship Kossuth. The god of fire, the fire of Forgotten Realms, god of fire. He's like the actual lord of the
planet. That makes
fire.
Sense. Yeah.
But I don't know that for sure. My brain's telling me that.
So. Even so, that's the god of fire, mm-hmm. and dwarves might worship that god and their forge as well.
Yeah.
But they might, you know, they might have a picture of him up in the, you know, framed on the. On the blacksmith wall?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
The forge wall
or
whatever.
Yeah.
they need Aesir gods. They need like Moradin.
I think Moradin's just so tied to the dwarves. He's
exactly
he's like the dwarf guy.
I'm not saying they need Moradin. I'm saying they need their own Moradin.
I think that's difficult because they are themselves created creatures. Like I think the idea is like even if they've been around for a long time, they are very much new to the world compared to probably most of the other races. And most of the other races literally had a god in the hand of their creation. These guys didn't. So they don't have that natural, you know, paternal or maternal deity that watches over them.
They got to start somewhere.
They got to start somewhere. They
got to
do
it.
If Kuatoa can do it, they can too.
They can. Forge so hard, God is born.
Maybe. Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, the Aesir god. They're so hot.
They're so sexy. The Aesir don't require food, drink, or sleep. How?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like the Warforged?
Like the Warforged, because they're constructs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aesir society is best described as communal, as every individual has a place in society, and matters of the state are more important than that of the individual.
Okay.
Living within fortresses made of bronze on their elemental plane of fire, Aesir nobles wield absolute power. So this is two very convergent takes on Aesir society, mm-hmm. which is true, depends on your setting. On one hand, they're communal, democratic. On the other, there's Aesir tyrants, Aesir nobles that wield with absolute power.
Okay.
Their outposts and cities are typically complexes of tower built from basalt, granite, or metal. Within these cities, they grow strange trees with metallic bark and leaves. If I had to make a guess, because it's been a while since I actually did this study, the communal stuff probably came from third edition, and the Aesir nobles that wield with absolute power were probably first and second edition.
Okay.
That's just a guess, but I'm pretty sure that's the divide.
Sounds like,
the divide.
Good, like a good guess to me.
Hey, we got a 4E lore drop.
What's up, 4E? You're back. Every episode.
Yeah, it happens a lot. 4E really liked the elemental stuff, so that's why they keep coming up.
Yeah.
Some sages claim that dwarves were once all enslaved to giants and titans. Modern dwarves descended from those who escaped that slavery, while Aesirs were the descendants of those who'd remained enslaved and were unable to escape their captors. Exposure to the plane of fire produced their unique fire qualities. That is, again, 4E specific. That lore does not jive with any other edition or settings lore, but there it is.
I would use the Warforge as a template for making a playable race out of it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, them being a construct doesn't preclude them from being a playable race, because we have the Warforge.
And you get to keep this lore, just like the Warforge keeps their, like, horrible history lore where they're tools for war.
Yeah, they're tools for war.
And these are tools for making cool shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Plug that in, and then maybe you get a sect that's in the elemental plane of fire. They gain autonomy. They go there. They get nobles. And then you have the ones that are on the material plane that are like, fuck the dwarves and the elves. We make the coolest shit. And everybody's mad about it. And they live in like a fucking volcano.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm still working on my elemental plane campaign. I'm actually doing like a prototype campaign with Tom and crew.
Yeah. And yeah. Okay.
In this main city of Nexus that I have working, I have like six different districts, and one's called the Smelting District, which is based off the elemental plane of magma.
Yeah.
And yeah, Aesirs run that shit. It's Aesirs everywhere.
See, that sounds cool.
Yeah. So
liquid hot magma.
Liquid hot magma.
Hot magma.
You know it. All right. Let's take a short rest.
Okay.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're fucking back.
Indeed we are.
We're back again. God damn it. God's damn it.
God's damn it.
No Ilian Beeren again this week.
Sorry, guys. We tried kind of sick.
Yeah, so this is still March 5th, the same as last episode, and we want to give Will as much recovery time as possible while still giving you guys an episode with him here. So that's the reason B. Patreon Ilian and Beeren content is going to resume in 2 weeks on our next recording. So, you know, just be patient. Stick with us. Mm-hmm. People get sick. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
But I do have the Azure stat block here.
Nice.
It's a medium elemental of lawful neutrality.
Yeah.
Okay. Armor class is 17. That natty.
That also tracks. Oh, shit. Dude, I'd say it should be 18.
Yeah, they look like
they're made of metal. People. Like, where do you stab them? You have to stab them in the beard, right? Like, that's the only way.
Well, they'd be 15, and then they also wield a shield. So that's going to give you +2 AC. So,
they have a natural armor of 15. Yeah. I guess it's bronze, so it's supposed to be more malleable.
15's pretty good, I feel like.
I mean,
this is a challenge rating 2 creature. That's pretty high.
Yeah.
17
yeah,
with the shield. That's really good.
Yeah.
HP is 39 or 68 plus 12. They have a walking speed of 30 feet. Strength is +3. Dex +1. Con +2. Intelligence +1. Wisdom +1. Charisma +0. Formidable. Formidable player stats.
I would increase con to 16. I mean, they're made of bronze. They're made of fire. Forging is what they do.
Give them the +3 and two
yeah.
spots.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? This is literally like built like a player. Like you.
Yeah, they are. And you know, it's a humanoidish low difficulty level monster. So again, this monster screams could be a playable race. To me, constantly.
Saving throws, con +4, damage immunities to fire and
Poison, because it makes sense. They're made of metal.
They just burn that shit away. Yeah. They're also they have a condition immunity to
Poison.
Yeah,
poison. Which also makes sense. Okay, real quick before we move on, I would definitely give them resistance to piercing and slashing damage.
Sure, they're made of metal.
Yeah, but that's just me.
But built like a player race. I mean, like if you keep with that logic,
We move away from player race. You're absolutely right.
Let's see. Senses. Passive perception is 11. Languages, Ignan.
That's the one they got.
Yeah, that's it.
Don't say hi. Say whatever the Ignan equivalent of hi is.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds fire, Mike.
I love it.
Challenge rating 2, 450 experience points with a proficiency bonus of 2. We got the heated body. So hot, that handsome. A creature that touches the Azure or hits it with a melee attack while within 5 feet of it takes 5 or 1d10 fire damage. Pretty cool. Hellish Rebuke on deck, but worse.
Yeah.
Heated weapons. When the Azure hits with a metal melee weapon, it deals an extra 3 or 1d6 fire damage included in the attack because it's so hot.
So I think we're talking about playable race conversion here. I think you could take this heated body and heated weapons thing and just make it like every short rest, you can turn up the heat and you basically gain these two things for a minute.
It'll be called turn up the heat.
Yeah, turn up the heat.
That's pretty cool.
What is Human Torch say? When he
flame on?
Flame on, yeah, you flame on.
The thing, this thing's wielding like a hammer with a pick on the back.
Yeah.
And it's on fire. It's so hot it's on fire. Wait, it just needs to be red.
It just needs to be, you're right. The artist took some liberties there. And I'm okay with it, but also.
It's cool.
I almost think it would look cooler if it was, like you said, if the whole hammer was glowing red hot.
Yeah, it just looks a lot more dangerous because it does have like a leather handle down at the bottom is what it looks like. Although that could be metal, I guess.
I'm going with that's bronze.
It's got a tassel on the back of it. Or is that the skirt?
No, that's part of his bronze skirt.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. We're good. Okay. I see it now. My bad.
You're good.
God, this thing's waist down is really cool looking, actually.
Yeah, no, it looks badass. It's very scary.
Illumination, the Acer sheds bright light in a 10-foot radius and dim light for an additional 10. Actions, Warhammer, melee weapon attack plus 5 to hit, reach of 5 feet, 1 target. It's going to hit for 7 or 1d8 plus 3 bludgeoning damage or 8, 1d10 plus 3 bludgeoning damage if used with two hands to make a melee attack plus 3 or 1d6 fire damage.
What if one of these things falls in the water?
It creates a steam god. I don't know.
Like
the water gets hot?
Yeah, they're going to flash boil a lot of that water. But eventually, if it's enough water, like, that fire can't burn, right? I mean, I guess it's a magical fire, so it continues to burn. But I feel like they should be in danger.
It's a good question. Do they drink water? I don't think so.
They definitely don't need to. But do they oil their joints like the Tin Man from Wizard of Oz? Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know they oil up that body.
They have to. Look how hot they are.
I'd have to. If I look like that.
They do look very shiny.
I'd be oiled up right now on camera.
So hot. Those Azers. So
that's the Azer. You got anything to add? It's. I think it's a cool monster.
What would make it cooler that you were telling me off mic?
Oh, yeah. So one of my criticisms, and anybody who's watched the show for a very long time has definitely heard this because it's been a while since I made this criticism, and this comes from my 4E days, is I feel like having a singular stat block that represents an entire species is lame and boring and doesn't really make sense. Like, all Azers in the world of Dungeons and Dragons should not have this one stat block. There should be different Azers. They're people. They have different professions. And some should be super trained warriors. Some should be like Azer, like, you know, hammer masters or shield masters or whatever. And they should have better stats, better ACs, and more actions, you know?
High charisma runway mobs.
Yeah, absolutely. Why, like, there should be Azure pyromancers that kind of tap into that fire spirit, right? Why, like, we should have, like, at least 3 or 4 base stat blocks for any given species to give the DM more tools to work with, you know? That way, like, yeah, could I do that myself? Absolutely. Do I? All the time. But I shouldn't have to. Necessarily. Like, if I want to run a party of Aziers that runs into my D&D party, and I want it to be an actually well-formed group of, like, we got one dude who's, like, a laborer, but then we got, like, 3 guys who are melee fighters, and we got, like, a wizard or caster leader guy.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to make all that stuff up. It would be cool if there were some base templates that I could just grab, you know?
Yeah.
And that, to me, should apply to... So 5e, strangely enough, has done this, done it for some creatures, like the kobold. The kobold, it's all legacy shit now, but like the kobold in Volo's Guide got a few extra stat blocks. So did the goblins and the hobgoblins. Drow got a few, I'm pretty sure.
Mm.
But back in the 4e days, almost any monster you can think of had different iterations, different elemental types, had different scalings for different, like, you know, are you doing this in heroic tier? Here's a level 5 one. Oh, you wanted to do it in paragon tier? Well, here's a level 12 and 18 one, you know? You wanted like a super displacer beast? Like, okay, here's a level 21 mega alpha predator displacer beast with all these extra powers. And that was cool. And what was cool about 4E2 is a very mathematically fairly well balanced. And there's no reason 5E can't do that, and there's no reason they shouldn't be doing it. Making monster stat blocks is not that difficult, you know, and it would be really cool if they provided that.
Yeah, I wonder if it has to do with like page printing and them having the caveat of like, do whatever you want, you know, like take the stat block and mess with it or whatever.
And that is their philosophy of like, we will provide the basis, and if you want more, you have the freedom to customize. And there is value in that philosophy. There is. but I do think they take it too far.
I think you bring a barrel of holy water into your Curse of Strahd campaign, go into the castle with your Azer buddy and smash it over his head and just create a room full of holy steam.
There
and
we go.
Fight the vampire in
Let's
there.
That'd fucking be fucking cool. Go. I'm into it.
Jump into a creek real quick while you're getting attacked by fucking whatever mob and like create that that flash fry of like you make a smoke bomb essentially, maybe you damage someone close by.
I like that.
A steam breath, you have them drink some room temp water and spit it out on people.
Hell yeah.
Like make a breath attack of some kind, spit some fire maybe, who knows. A headbutt attack that incinerates people's shirts.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. It doesn't just have to be their shirt, but yeah. No. A headbutt attack that does fire damage would be fucking cool.
Would be pretty sick.
And there's no reason they can't. Look, their head is made of fire. They should be able to do that. But yeah, you know, a good dungeon master is going to take that extra step to do all the creative fun stuff. You know?
Yeah, I think so. And I would allow my players to do the kooky shit I just listed off to some varying degree.
Yeah, I'm just saying it would be nice to have a little bit of variance in some of these monsters. Like, give me a few versions of something. Give me a scaled up version, you know, just to make my life of DM prep a little easier and a little smoother. You know?
I agree.
I think to help people who aren't DMs transition into being a dungeon master,
be creative with it, give some ideas. I think the solve for not printing, you don't have to print 5 Azer stat blocks back-to-back pages. You can have an augmentation table. I think that's cool.
Sure.
Hey,
yeah, absolutely.
Azer can have these abilities and you can add these to at your discretion.
And there are some monsters that they have a little like DM's note of like, here's a variant that you can do. Yeah. And I think
variant
we need more of those.
This is like the first example most people
see,
right?
Yeah. But they have it for like dragons and spellcasting, and they have it for a few other things. And yeah, I think more of those little variants, and maybe even variance tables, like you said, would be nice little additions.
Yeah. We've reached out to people. The audience has told us like, hey, I don't come up with stuff on the fly very good. I rely on the random tables. It's like, well, we should have that. And you made a whole book, like fucking put good shit in there instead of, you know.
Like, I mean, a lot of it is the good basis, but it's just they just don't do the extra steps. They don't do the extra stuff. They don't make your life any easier than the basics.
Right, so. Yeah. So it is on the DM in a lot of cases, and that's fine, I guess. But yeah, it would be nice to have that augmentation thing. I think is a good idea.
Yeah.
But that's all I really wanted to add.
Okay. That sounds good. Well, then let's get ready for a long rest.
Sure. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the long rest. This is the part of the show where we are now talking to you guys via whatever medium you decided to reach out through.
Indeed.
We're going to sort of rotate between them.
We did snail mail last time. We're doing YouTube comments this time.
Yeah, and typically I don't foresee us having a lot of snail mail in that amount like we did last time all the time.
But you could be the change that makes that different.
Yes, but to supplement that, we are also going to be reading emails, which we've traditionally not been great at responding to. Just because we did used to get a lot and we were way too busy to answer them. I remember one day I just like answered all of them. I answered like fucking 60 emails or something like that back to back. I just spent a day doing it. I was like, fuck, there's no way I could do this all the time.
Yeah.
But now we've kind of gotten to a place where I think we can manage that a little better, and we've got some help in the email department. So thank you, Mariko. And her and I have kind of worked out how we were going to go about that. So, next time we read, fan mail, it'll include the email. Just so you know, thedungeoncast@gmail.com. Also, we have a P.O. box, which that address is in the notes below. But today we're going to be reading YouTube comments from the Frostfell episode.
Indeed.
We're getting back on track. It's been a while since we read anything. So let me pull these up. Oh, there's going to be a lot of comment. What happened with the contest?
Oh, gosh. I've been so sick. We shot the video. We know how many dice were in there.
Yes, we did the count.
So we need to do an announcement.
Yes.
And we need to release that video. And
yes.
And we also need to find a winner.
Yes.
So how about this? I'll find a winner this week.
Okay.
So anyone listening to this, we're sorry, we're super late. When Brian said I was sick, I was almost hospitalized.
Yeah,
so
it wasn't great, man.
Please bear with us.
I had never seen Will like responding to stuff the way he had. Like I will vouch for Will 100%. Like,
but yes, we like, thank you for reminding me. Yes, we will find a winner for the contest. We'll announce it on social media this week, and then next recording we'll announce you there, and then we'll also probably release that video as
yeah
well.
Okay, so mid-March, things are popping off for the contest.
Yes.
The prize will be handed down. So thank you guys for, because I opened this up, I was like, shit. Like, Will and I had a lot to catch up on.
Yes, absolutely.
So we kind of missed this one. But there are, I'm going to skip the comments of people guessing. Some people are right on the money. Some people are
did
way
you see,
the fuck
I
off.
I remember right after we did the video, someone guessed and they were like so close. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, I think it's the one I'm looking at.
Yeah? Let me see it. I could tell you.
Well, it is close. The top one.
No. This one was like on it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to skip all the ones that I don't think are funny.
Okay, sounds good to me.
But I will read the ones that, if you guess the really, really high number, sorry to crack on you, but it'll be fun. So from our downgrade, this is from the Frostfell episode. That was just in case I didn't say that. From our downgrade 5836, for those interested in a world where light does not move, vision would work the following way. Hang on. When you are still, the world will appear black. This is due to how the light is not moving to reflect in your eyes. However, as soon as you take a single step, the light will suddenly click on, and it will stay on so long as you move in a forward direction. Moving sideways is unadvised, as the world will look squashed and stretched, and going backwards will leave you blind again, as you are moving away from the light that would otherwise be going into your eyes. That is an interesting way to sort of, because in that episode we were talking about how light freezes, not even the light can move.
Yeah.
And I asked how that would look.
With this, I think that way of doing it only works if you're staring directly at the light source. Mm-hmm. But you know,
that's why they're talking about not moving sideways.
Even if I'm looking away from these lights, there is still light reflecting off of, you know, the floor and the wall and whatnot. So like, there still should probably be light in most directions.
Right. Yeah.
It's just if you're not moving, you can't see. But then what if I just wiggle my head around? You know what I mean? Like, is that getting me enough light to see? I don't know.
It's a very interesting take, and I would have, what a nightmare to describe this to players. Although yeah. I wouldn't spend a lot
also,
of time.
I don't think it would work like that, because the fact is, like, you only see, what we see is light reflected off of objects. And if light is generally not moving, it's not being reflected off any particular object. So that light doesn't serve a purpose. You know what I mean? So yeah. I don't know if you would actually be able to see like that.
I commend them for coming up with an answer, whereas I could not.
Indeed.
Brentnall 1 says 3,000 dice. You're way off, my man. So,
yeah.
That's high.
That was a little too high.
Go guess again if you have time. Tyler Gordon, 1641. Great video. Love all the elemental videos this year. Oh, and one thing to note, there is a theory in one of the old D&D books that Cryonax is actually a demon lord who switched places with the real ice elemental lord for some reason. And shout out to Demogorgon and his Ixtatchital homies.
Shout out to Demogorgon. I'm curious what source book that is. Obviously, this was a Frostfell episode and not a Cryonax episode. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's some Cryonax source material that I didn't get my hands on. But I am very curious to see what source book that was.
Also, me too. King Llama YTTTV. They gave us an update on their campaign, and I want to acknowledge that this comment, but I cannot read this whole thing on air. Thank you. I'm gonna go ahead and hit the like. Yeah, we do read like the vast majority of the comments we get. Hey, Samuel here, 2733. I'm not Samuel. That's the YouTube. Don't look at me like that. You know I'm not Samuel. I always love the idea of the plane of ice. They said plane or ice, but I think they meant plane of ice.
Yeah.
Places so cold, concepts freeze. I believe I read somewhere that time begins to slow from the cold, even coming to a complete halt in places cold enough. It inspired me to make a white great worm. She has spent a big portion of her life on the plane of ice, so most of her magic and sorcery is cold damage and chronomancy. That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Particles slow to the point where the fabric of space-time breaks down and can no longer project.
Sure.
I guess. DC has a cold power that kind of works like that. There's like a Mr. Freeze chemical cold, and then there's like the power of cold.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Marcos was telling me it's two different things. things.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, Captain Cold, he has cold power. He just makes things so cold they can't do stuff.
I thought Captain Cold had like a freeze gun.
Yeah, but it works on this like borderline magic principle.
Okay, gotcha. Okay,
but you're yes.
Okay, cool. I just thought I'd make sure I wasn't misremembering that.
Cameron Pierce 5943. Oh man, you guys need to check out Minx and Boo's Journal of Villainy. So many good stat blocks of creatures you've covered for 5e, and it's semi-official.
It's semi-official.
That's the problem. Is we hear a lot about Minx and Boo, and we love it, but it's just not quite
official.
Official, and we just don't do non-official content on the show. Yeah. Put your whole foot in it, Wizards.
I mean, maybe. I know, right? Like, yeah, that's something. Don't just dip a toe and be like, oh, never mind.
Yeah. They also they left a second comment that says, I love damage that ignores immunity. Like a powerful fire elemental overlord burning lesser fire elementals as their fiery energy is consumed in a preternatural conflagration. Me too. I thought this person guessed three dice and I was about to roll their shit out. But
there's a lot of joke. There were a lot of joke guesses. That's okay.
Yes. Eric Pierce 5598. After the mention of fire freezing and becoming black, ice-like flame, I now have a new magic item for the shop. It's a cold fire torch that has a deep bluish-black flame that radiates cold, lowering the temperature in a 30-foot radius by 10 degrees and gives off only dim light in a 10-foot radius. I may even have it where the overlapping areas of multiple ones can lower the temperature by an extra 5 degrees per extra torch affecting the area.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah,
that's that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
Wes WTF 2562 says drift globe are the new sun rods.
Yeah, but no one uses them.
Yeah,
but who can blame them? Because 5e, everyone has dark vision, so you don't need them.
True.
I've given you guys in two different campaigns, or at least twice in the same campaign. I've given you guys multiple drift globes, and no one ever uses them.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's just the whole vision stuff is like such a dead inside when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Preston Garner 8796. Are you guys going to talk about the Swamp of Oblivion known as the Plain of Oozes and Great Conflagration known as the Plain of Ash?
Yep.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
There's a reply. Oh, it just says yes. Very good, Will. That was you.
Yeah.
Sunrods were also in third edition. Yes, they were.
Okay, good. That was duly noted. I think I asked because I was like, I don't know if they were in third edition, but I know they were in fourth. But good to know they were in third.
That was X Reaper XIII.
Okay.
Which I'm not sure if I'm supposed to Roman numeral that up or not. Pathalo Greenskin says, I ran an adventure in the Frostfell. My samurai lightning Sorcadin?
Like a sorcerer paladin.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I'm not on Reddit that much, sorry. Had to retrieve a legendary artifact, Shira Nui. In my setting, there were two dragons. Oh, man, I opened it up, and it's super duper long, so we're going to leave it at that. I've got too many
people
comments to
read. People
love
to share their character stories, and that's cool, but yes, they can be quite long.
It's true, and I love it, and now I know what Sorcadins are, so thank you.
Brian learned something today. There's also Sorlock, which is Sorcerer Warlock.
Yes.
Trying to think if there's any others that like pop it.
Bardlock. It's basically multi-classing Warlock, which is super popular.
Yeah. Pallock.
Pallylock.
I see Pallock.
Pallock.
Pallock, yeah.
Andy English 4303 says, Crynax has quasi-official 5e stat block in Minx and Boo.
Bardedin. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, Minx and Boo. Yes, I know.
Oh, did it get brought up twice?
Yeah, I think it gets brought up multiple times in this comment section.
Yeah.
We just don't touch Minx and Boo, sorry. Yeah. I guess it would have been a cool read for the episode, but also unofficial, might confuse people, and then you have to go buy Minx and Boo.
Thing is, like, okay, if I read the lore from that, but it's not official lore, like, I can't act like it is, and it means I gotta be doing constant caveats through the whole episode, and that's gonna be annoying.
If we let Minx and Boo into the show, we have to let in, like, random internet shit from everywhere.
Yeah, and I also, like what you said earlier, like I actually feel that way. Like Wizards needs to fucking own it. Like own your shit. Like don't release this weird semi official. It's just weird. It's just why are you doing that? Yeah. And why not? Aren't you releasing things in an official capacity? Because if you did, it would be giving people a whole lot more official stuff to work with. And guess what? Yes, it would get in this show, and it'd be great.
It kind of feels like the Beetle and Grimm stuff they release. They like sort of. They're releasing official content, but it's like the Beetle and Grimm version. It's like thousands of dollars.
I don't know what the Beetle and Grimm.
They're is. Like, you know, you get like a metal, you get all this extra shit with like your book pre-order,
okay.
Like that sort of thing. Okay. I'm very disinterested in it at this point, so I don't know what all the details are. I'm sure it's extravagant. Sure. It looks that way. Anyway, Renafi says, I laughed when I heard that D&D has Eternal Ice because a recent Pokemon game, Legends of Arceus, introduced something they called Eternal Ice. It was also special and different from normal ice in that it was the favorite snack of this guardian of the Pokemon, whose bloodline had this duty bestowed upon them by the creator god themselves. The guardian could be differentiated from the rest of his species by being a giant, like large hill size lad. He was a big man with his extra hard ice.
Well, I'm pretty sure Pokemon since Generation 3 has had the item Never Melt Ice, which is a held item that boosts ice attacks by 10%.
It's true.
Yeah.
I think the Lapras be holding that sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been waiting to read this comment. Scott McPherson says, okay, you ready? There's an ellipses in between the okay.
I hope so.
And I'm going to own this one. Vanilla Ice had nothing to do with Under Pressure.
Oh, yeah. I commented on this one. Queen and David Bowie. I said I let it slide.
Yes. And I actually just misspoke because I know that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I was, when you said it, I was surprised, but I'm going to let it slide.
It's just the Vanilla Ice does the hook.
He does the hook. Yeah. Pressure. Well, wasn't there like a lawsuit that he stole it? He basically did. Yeah.
He did.
You're like, I knew that.
Yeah.
You're hilarious. No,
I do. Yeah. Queen was my first CD.
Queen is an incredible group. And
but
Blink-182
is my first record, and it was recorded by my cousin for me on a cassette tape.
What record? Which
Animal of the State.
Okay, for sure.
Yeah. I wasn't a Dude Ranch guy till later.
Dude Ranch is okay. It's got some good songs. It's just okay. I will stand by
Cheshire
that.
Cheshire Cat is also worse than Dude Ranch.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. The drumming is just fucking awesome.
Take Off Your Pants and Jacket rocks. And also there's subsequent two albums after that, the self-titled and the
Neighborhoods. Self-titled
is
very good.
And Neighborhoods, I think, is very good as well.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever really got into that one. I kind of fell off the Blink train.
That's fine. Most people did.
Jeff Cook, MN8BQ. I come from the land of the ice and snow.
Okay, Zeppelin.
Cue the music.
Yeah.
It just makes me think of Thor Ragnarok now.
Yeah, I mean, the song is about Vikings, so.
It's true. Demogorgon 7007 says, you don't know how long I've been waiting for someone to cover this exact lore. Thank you. You're welcome. Demogorgon.
Yes, my lord. My dark lord. No, but seriously, you're welcome.
Humanoid Cable Dreads. That's a cool YouTube name.
You know what my YouTube name is? Will. It's just Will.
Were you there first?
I don't know. I got it.
Usually they tack on numbers for you.
I swear to God, mine says Will. I'm not even fucking with you. I'm gonna show you.
No, I believe you. They said also known as Winnipeg. This comment has 4 likes and a heart from us, which I presume you did. Sometimes I do it. Sometimes Will does it. Mostly yeah. Will. But what does that mean? What is this in reference to?
What was the
comment? This is also known as Winnipeg.
Oh, Winnipeg, it's a cold place. It's a cold city. Forget what...
Yeah, I know what Winnipeg is. It's in Canada.
It's in Canada. There we go. The
Winnipeg Jets.
So Frostfell, also known as Winnipeg.
That's the joke. That's fucking funny.
Yes, it is.
It could be like...
It was mildly
somebody
funny.
Could have been like, also known as Buffalo, New York.
Okay, I lied. It's Will Stark 1000.
See? Sorry. Okay.
My bad. It's just when I leave a comment, it just says Will, but maybe I'm the only one seeing that.
User error. Moss Hive Network 117 says Frostfell, Shadowfell, Underfell.
Frostfell, Shadowfell. Is there an Underfell?
They're making a joke. Like, why did they call it the Underdark when they could have called it the Underfell? I'm pretty sure that's what they're getting at here.
Oh, okay. I don't know because you got to remember the Shadowfell.
Not like the other.
I don't know about the Frostfell's lore because I'm pretty sure it was just called the Plain of Ice before. But Shadowfell as a term didn't even come around until 4th edition. 4th edition invented the idea of the Shadowfell, but not of the Plane of Shadow, which it's based off of. They're basically the same thing, but the name Shadowfell was a 4th edition thing. And I think Frostfell came out later. So
some tall weeds.
But Underdark came out in 1st edition, so they're not going to go rename it. Underdark's cool. There's also the Shadow Dark and the Fey Dark. Those are things.
Hey, Archaeolunas 4043 says, it's the god dang year of the elemental.
Absolutely.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
And y'all for birthing me into being a DM. Nice.
Congratulations.
Same thing happened to me. We rolled characters last night. Woo! That's got a lot of likes on it. Very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Petra 7865 says, not sure about 5e, but the sun rod was in 3.5 as cool. Well.
That's
yep.
Awesome.
Yep, we got it.
Good to know.
Nailed it. Timothy Barr 8246. Shout out to Demogorgon. Shout out to Demogorgon. I've been following for about 6 months. You guys are great for getting to sleep in a good way, though.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
Nice. Here it is for you. Let the YouTube comments drift you into your unconscious state.
There's no way someone falling asleep to our show made it to this point. Oh, Christ.
It's ASMR for you.
I hate it.
Now I want that shirt, guys. Oh, that was Sir Nunos Lives. Thank you, Sir Nunos. We were wearing our Don't Fart in the Underdark shirts.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. That store's coming soon.
Yeah, we're working on it.
Someone else is working on it, and they're doing a great job.
They are. We're very excited. We get updates. It will be soon. Oh, you commented back. Good. Okay. Well, Sir Nunos was answered promptly 3 weeks ago. Agenjo Anejo or Anhenho Anejo. Like, you know, the J's, man. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It says cool, literally. Very nice.
Nice. Very nice.
The Mario Sack says, whoa. Was binging Dungeon Cast episodes for campaign ideas, immediately hit with a new one. Truly a blessing. Shout out to Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
What a good place to end the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for all your comments. Yeah.
And now for the remainder of the long rest, which we've decided will be pre-recorded until we decide to record a new one.
Indeed.
Hey, everybody, we've got some news for you about the Dungeon Cast. Will, do you want to hit it off with Star Seeker's Guide to Drakenstar? What's going on?
Well, oh, yeah, absolutely. So Star Seeker's Guide to Drakenstar, the book based off of Supergrass Saga, the space sci-fi campaign that we ran for 3 years. I'm still working hard on it, and I wanted to say thank you to everybody who supported us, both on Kickstarter and the backer kit. But for anyone interested in backing us on the backer kit, I wanted to say that your time is limited. I will be closing the backer kit on April 1st, charging cards probably in May. I don't have the dates 100% on that when it comes to charging cards, but I will be closing out the backer kit on April 1st. I just really want to wrap a bow on this. And again, thank you to everyone who has supported. And yeah, go ahead and get in there. It's drakenstar.com. If you want to pre-order the books, and there's also the add-ons, there's the dice set and there's the poster, as well as a few other things. And yeah, go ahead and check it out. But just so everyone knows, I will be closing the backer kit on April 1st. So after that point, pre-orders will no longer be open. Everyone who's made their order will be getting their book, and there will be no more orders accepted. So
there you have it. So check out Star Seeker's Guide to Drakenstar. That's what was the website?
Drakenstar.com.
Drakenstar.com. It's based off of our actual play D&D game, SuperQuest Saga, which we also encourage you to check out right now. FBATS is going to be airing again, so there should be new episodes up. Let's see. We got the merch store. We still have are working on our brand new merch store. We're going to have two merch stores. It's going to be a little weird for a second.
Yeah, but we have great news coming very soon about the new one.
Yeah, so you'll hear that soon. But our regular merch store with just the regular Dungeon Cast stuff is available. There's a link in the description below. You can also follow us on Discord. That's a place we love to interact with fans.
Indeed.
So come talk to us there. You can also find us on social media at the Dungeon Cast on X, Mastodon, and Instagram. Thank you to Will for doing stuff like that. And mm-hmm. if you want to support us, one of the best ways to do that is by leaving a review, telling a friend, and by leaving a review, I mean on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to the show, hitting that like and subscribe on YouTube, or supporting us on patreon.com/thedungeoncast. We have early episodes that are ad-free, along with a slew of other material that you can reference, including notes for the show, fun skits. Now we have an Ilion and Beeren tier. We have fucking all kinds of stuff. So go check it out. And with that, we're going to call it a game.
Let's call it a game. We'll talk to you guys later.
The Dungeon Cast.
Hello, Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.